FM KMOX, happy Friday to everybody. Oh man, my voice sounds good. It's gonna be quite a show today. Between my brain and this voice.
Cancel all the guests. Dave's just gonna talk.
Don't do it. Don't cancel it now.
They all just said, okay, great, I'm not coming.
They heard my voice. They're like, I'm out.
There's no way I compete with that.
I cannot face that guy down.
I didn't realize Wheeler was hosting today. Because I sound like Wheeler. Yeah, we're kind of suffering here because we got the day off yesterday, and I don't think we texted at all, any of us.
Well, I did, but you guys didn't answer me.
Oh, yeah, we ignored you.
I watched the TikTok, though.
I did, too, and I didn't know where he was going with
it. I honestly didn't care. It was a joke.
I don't know what to say. Yeah.
I also did not watch the TikTok.
I watched it.
I did.
It's fine.
I don't remember
what it is. It's not mandatory,
right,
guys.
I always have. No, but it is with you because you send such weird stuff.
It was just people trying to run.
I know, just like the same
side
leg.
That was
right.
Very funny. We should do that next week.
You never know what you're going to send.
Like, it's trying to run with your right arm and right knee going up at the same time, and it's hilarious because you can't do it.
You know why I didn't reply? Because I opened it immediately, and then I was like, I'm going to wait before I reply. I wanted to seem cool, but then I forgot to reply.
It was fine, guys. I had forgotten about it until you just said it.
But no, we all agreed just now before the show that yesterday was the most Saturday Thursday of all time. Like, it was just a weekend day, man. And somehow we're back.
Suddenly remembering that it was Thursday, and I'm like, no, it's not. Get out of here. That's enough of that.
Where do we want to start? Well, I'll start with the shout out. Yesterday, I met a couple of the Daves from my band. I think we have four of them. Dave Cowles and Dave Farver at Spencer's Grill in Kirkwood. And man, is that place a gem. Have you guys been?
No.
No, I'm about to look it up because you've talked about it so many times.
Dude, it is the best. It is like so old school. It is a diner. The breakfasts are like $10.
Mm.
It's so cheap. And it's so good, and I had such a great morning because I sat there with the Daves, and they're way bigger stars than I will ever hope to be, and they've done tours with Greg Allman and stuff, and we're there for like 2.5 hours, just like drinking coffee and coming up with a set list for our shows this summer, and really cool.
Sounds fun.
But shout out Spencer's. Well done. Whoever owned it for a decade sold it a few years back, and whoever bought it is doing a great job.
Cool.
I can't tell the difference, so...
And shout out to Spencer's Gifts, also, that used to be.
Oh, man.
Or perhaps still
the
is
staple
in the
of every
Alton,
mall trip.
Dude,
Square
if
mall.
You could combine them, if I could eat a cheese omelet while looking at Cheryl Teague's boobs, oh my God.
Get like a remote control that's shaped like a butt or whatever.
Pricing a pet rock.
whatever they had going on. I never really got a good handle on what they had going on.
Everything. It was a little bit of everything. It was just nonstop chaos.
I remember several times that I disappointed my dad. And they're all kind of similar. One was the pet rock. I spent my own allowance money, saved it up to buy a pet rock. And you can imagine a man who spent his formative teenage years in the South Pacific fighting World War II and who made a living climbing scaffolds didn't think that was hilarious when I paid $5 for a rock. He's like, you got a driveway full of pet rocks. You don't get it, Dad.
That's pretty good.
That's such a good dad line.
No, he wasn't wrong.
No.
Driveway full of pet rocks
so
is pretty
funny,
good.
Though.
Yeah.
But they don't have eyeballs.
I don't think they had. Did they have eyeballs?
Oh, no, I don't know.
I don't remember.
There used
eyeballs.
To be, like, people would take rocks and, like, make it look like a turtle and you put little eyeballs on it or whatever.
Well, weren't you buying their habitat more than anything else?
They had a habitat?
Yeah.
Okay, I may remember completely wrongly. But what I remember is like a little like cardboard thing like you would buy a cat in. It had like air holes
and stuff. I'm looking at it right now, yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, maybe. I feel like this might have popped back up like during the 90s and you would buy like their house and decorate their house. That was more what it was
about.
That's
taking it up a notch.
Well, where are they going to live?
Yeah.
In that little thing?
Yeah. No, no, that's no home.
How many times did you guys have a pet turtle for like 48 hours? Put grass in a shoebox?
Times.
Yeah.
Never.
Never?
No, we never did that.
No turtles?
Oh.
No turtles,
like turtles
in Michigan?
Though. No, they were rare to find in our neighborhood anyway.
Man, we were thick with them.
Were you?
There was one time we had a turtle, and then my brother and I were like, well, let's just run inside for a second and grab him like some lettuce or something. Came back out. He was gone.
It's a fast turtle.
I thought the whole thing was they were slow and we had plenty of time, but apparently not. He thought, I am getting the hell out of here.
He didn't like the cut of your jib.
No.
He's like, it's like, there's something wrong with the girl. Got to get out of here. I'm just avoiding talking about anything real. Because we have, there's real stuff.
Just have fun.
No, we don't have to talk about real stuff.
Oh, but there's real stuff. And I predicted it. So it's kind of about me. So.
Oh, all right.
He was like, I have no choice but to tell everyone I was right again.
I have no choice but to spike the ball. So the day before yesterday, I did a little soliloquy where I said, here's how Iran's going to end. And I said basically three things. Trump's going to leave. He's going to say the Strait of Hormuz is Europe's problem, and he's going to say we don't need to remove the enriched uranium, which was the biggest deal of all of it, I thought. And then yesterday he did an interview with Sean Hannity, and he asked him about that, and it's making big news now all over the place because he said that removing the uranium is really just for public relations purposes. It's not important to him or the country. And it's really to mollify the fake news. So,
what?
Yes.
So I thought you don't care about the fake news. Why would you need to mollify them?
Yeah. So he is definitely setting up the third leg of my stool that he's going to leave the enriched uranium there. Also, I didn't say this to you guys, but Wednesday night, the whole family went to Yinching. Hello, Yinching. Get the sesame chicken. And I predicted to the room, I said, here's what's going to happen. He's going to go to China, and he's going to make some major concession on Taiwan so he can get his you-know-what out of the ringer in Iran. And it took like 18 hours, because I don't know if you've seen this yet, but he said, because we have traditionally, and look, I'm no expert on our relationships with Taiwan. But I know for decades now, we have been invested in Taiwan. They're an ally. It's not like NATO, but we've always like sold them weapons and helped them with weapons and, you know, said that we would defend them if they were attacked by China. And they asked the president about both those things. And he said, I have to really think about it on selling any more weapons to Taiwan. And they said, well, would you defend them if China attacked? And he said, I don't want to answer that question.
Well, that means no.
Well, they asked Rubio a couple hours before, are there any changes at all in our political stance toward Taiwan? And he said, no, none. And then the president basically, you know, like every leader before this has said, yes, of course, we'll defend Taiwan. They're a democratic, you know, country and independent. So this is the first time in my knowledge lifetime that a president has kind of hedged and said, well, I don't know. I don't want to answer that question. So unfortunately, I think I'm right on both things.
Mm.
Ask me more things.
What else is going to happen, Dave?
I can tell you it's going to happen between me and you in about 5 minutes.
What's that?
Going to give you a big kiss?
Oh, I'm like, is there something that I'm missing?
Then he's going to punch me. Then I'm going to go to HR. Then I'm going to retire.
He's got it all planned out.
Dave, do you remember the show Night Gallery?
Oh, my God. Do I remember it? You saying that made everything I got go numb.
I only watched a few episodes because I was scared of it.
Recently or when you were a kid?
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
But there was an episode of the little boy who could only, he could make perfectly accurate predictions, but it was only 24 hours in advance.
Oh.
Do you remember this episode?
No, I don't.
Well, spoiler alert to anyone planning on watching Night Gallery. At one point, he's like, everything's going to be good from now on. Nothing bad's ever going to happen again. And everybody's all happy. Turns out, there was a meteor or something about to hit the earth, but
there
he just
go.
Wanted. Because how could he know? He can only see 24 hours in advance.
Yeah.
Basically, that's you predicting all of this stuff. Right
pretty
now,
much. Pretty much. Yeah. Twilight Zone to me was very like, and it was Earth the whole time. Blah. You know, I love Twilight Zone, but Night Gallery was just like they got into the Devil's Diary and
yeah.
just started making
something
stories.
Something was messed up about that show.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's out there. I would encourage anyone to go watch it. It's from the 70s. It's really good. Watch the Night Gallery movie. It's
that
even
was
better.
Knockoff Twilight Zone, right?
Not knockoff. It was the same guy, Rod okay. Serling, with bigger 70s hair. Mm. Oh, did you see what Cash is up to? We're getting all of our politics out of the way, guys. It's okay. Friday. Mr. Patel didn't do anything illegal. People have done it before, but it is really, really frowned upon, and I find it disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care if Nick did it. I'd be like, dude, that's disgusting. He arranged for a private snorkeling trip to the USS Arizona in Pearl Harbor, which is a cemetery, and 1,000 or so sailors are still there on the ship, and he went snorkeling there.
Yeah, it's called it's a VIP snorkel. And the supposedly, you know, you're there to learn about the historic significance of the memorial as the final resting place and tomb for hundreds of service members. But from what I understand, this kind of thing is not open to the public. Like, you have to have right. connections in order. Yeah, they're not just letting the general public snorkel at this site.
And I find it disgusting. I don't think it should happen. But don't you have anything to do? Don't any of these people have anything to do? I work pretty hard. I work almost 24/7, like putting the show together and doing this and doing that. And the Secretary of Transportation has time to travel and shoot a new television show. And Cash Patel can go snorkel the Arizona. Like, what? I mean, just... And then what's-his-face, the guy that covered up for the wrestling sexual abuse, who's the congressman, Jim Jordan,
yeah,
gave it an interview last night and said that's life when asked about people struggling with gas prices. And then in the next interview he did, he denied ever saying that. It's like, I don't know. When the American public is suffering the way we are, and when things are so unsure, we don't know where things are going to land at all, like, why don't you portray strength and professionalism, you know?
Well, they think strength means acting like a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people right now that think that just acting mean is strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's toughness. Toughness is enduring punishment and coming out the other side. It's not dishing it out. The weakest people in the world can dish out punishment. The strong ones, the tough ones, are the ones that can take it and keep going. That's what toughness is. These idiots all think that being tough is just telling people they're wrong and that I'm right. And then you just got to be mean. And if you're mean, like, mean is not tough. Mean is just mean.
Mm-hmm. One more thing. And I promise this, if politics comes up later in the show, I won't bring it up. But I'm really bothered by the blatant lying. So when a couple days ago, when President Trump said, when he was asked, to what extent do you think about the financial situations that Americans have? And he said, not at all. I don't think about it at all. And then they asked J.D. Vance about it. And of course he lied. He's a liar. And said, oh, that's not what he said. No, that's exactly what he said. And then they just kept asking people and they just kept covering for him, which, Wheels, as you said, is sort of like the dance we do now.
Right.
He says something. He didn't say it.
Oh, there's the whole routine, right? It's, he didn't say that. And then, well, if he said it, he was kidding. Well, if he wasn't kidding, he didn't really mean it. Well, if he meant it, that means he's right. Like, that's the cycle that we go through.
Yeah.
It's say a thing, deny that it was said, then say it was in jest. And then if he wasn't kidding, he meant it. And if he meant it, it's the real thing and it's a good thing.
And then maybe the worst part of the whole trip to China was Marco Rubio wearing that stupid Nike sweatsuit, the same one that Maduro was wearing.
I didn't see it.
When we woke him up from a dead sleep. You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, my God. Woof.
What is he doing?
And he posed for it. It's not like a candid where they're like, oh, hey, look, DeMarco's going for a run. Like, here's my fit for the day. Gonna meet Xi.
Outfit of the day.
Outfit of the day.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, that's what it means.
O-O-T-O?
I thought it meant out of the door.
Nope. Outfit of the day.
Outfit of the day.
I'm just learning. Just learning. I started saying, great song, Rage, but I forgot I wrote it down.
I'm enjoying it, too.
It's a great, Stevie Winwood, man. Sorry, Wheels.
It's all right. I'll play along. Yeah, it's great.
You can't even feel it. Like, I can feel metal.
Yeah, doesn't it feel good
like, there's nothing about this that... Like, this is grinding in your ears. This is the screeching, baying of goats from hell.
What is, how does it make you feel when you hear it?
Sleepy. No, what I do recognize are voice talents. Like, I can recognize how great his voice is. The music and the beep, 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 beep. No thanks.
What was that noise?
I didn't... The stupid keyboards, because it was the 80s and everything was keyboards.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't recall hearing that noise.
Oh, it's there. Well, I mean, it's not like that. It's better than that.
Join us on the stream. You can join us on Facebook or YouTube. Jeremy says, hey, DGS, I was at the Cards game in Sacramento yesterday. Lots of Cards fans in the stands to cheer on the comeback win. Great win. Ricky Horton will join us in about 10 minutes. Bob says, hey, Dave, take a listen to Sammy Hagar's song, Crackin' the World. He calls countries divided in 2025. I'll do that. And Jason says, what was the name of that show, Dave? Mentioned the last segment, like Twilight Zone. It's called Night Gallery. Both by Rod Serling. Rach, tell me about the evil tech companies.
Oh, my goodness. Let me get this story pulled up here. So Sesame Street did a whole thing on their show about, like, hey, kids, you need to know when to put your tech to bed. Put your smartphones and your tablets to bed. Which, I mean, okay, sure, there's enough kids using screens that maybe that's a helpful segment for parents and kids alike. But it turns out that this segment on Sesame Street was enlisted by Meta and Google. They also reached out to brands like the Girl Scouts and Highlights Magazine, and it's all about teaching kids to use technology in moderation, which, again, if you just hear that statement by itself, makes sense.
Sounds
That's
great.
But these are the same companies that are designing apps that make it difficult for those same kids to put the tablet down and to unplug. So they're the ones creating the issue and creating the algorithm and intentionally gobbling up as much of these kids' time and attention spans as possible.
See, then
but then to wash their hands, they're going, but we did this segment and we told them it's time to put the phone away.
We told you smoking was dangerous. And you shouldn't have done it.
This article I'm looking at here, it's on a website called Cyber News, and they liken it to Philip Morris teaching kids how to safely smoke cigarettes. Like, I don't know if that's a one-to-one comparison, but it's definitely, it just feels like an attempt for them to get ahead of the problem and be like, oh, I don't know. We don't know what's going on. We had no idea it was so bad for kids. We've been saying this whole time. There's times you can't use your screen, but I don't know. To me, it just feels pretty, pretty diabolical.
How does that compare to you guys to all of the alcohol commercials saying, please drink responsibly?
It's about
the same.
Because
it kind of has the same vibe
that's
to
same.
Me. Yeah. Right.
Bunch of lawyers.
Yeah.
Telling you.
I mean, it's a good message. It's good to hear. But obviously, if... I think the difference is alcohol, everyone knows, is addictive. Right? Mm-hmm. We've known this for generations. This other stuff is relatively new. And a lot of those companies have pretended that it's not or acted like they weren't doing anything to make it more so. And I think that's where it's the cigarettes is more the comp, where you're covering it or pretending, or actually in some of the cigarette cases, weren't they adding nicotine to make it more addictive back in the day? And isn't that what got them in trouble to begin with?
Yeah.
Well, this is more like that. It's not so much the simple message. It's that your actions contradict your words.
Absolutely. And that's just what just makes it so gross and yucky. Now she can't be that one.
Our buddy Janelle just texted me and said, were you aware that you were just showing your entire chest on camera?
What happened? I missed that.
It unbuttoned, came about like that.
There we go.
And, your sunburn.
A sunburn. It's generally tan.
Oh, all right.
Look at that tattoo.
Oh, I got them everywhere. I got them everywhere. And I said, yes, I noticed that. And I tried to be cool about it, like, oh, maybe I'll just button this up. So. Yeah. Ricky Horton joined us. Rick, welcome home, buddy.
Hey, great to be with you, and I'm finding out more and more about you as things go on, Dave. I'm really interested in seeing your tattoos, by the way.
Oh, don't act like you haven't seen them already, my friend.
I've seen some.
Four hours out on the course, things happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a big question for you guys. Wheels, I listened to you with great interest on Rush Hour, and you and Matt and Bernie will talk a lot about StatCast, and he's actually pitching better than he should, or he's actually hitting worse than what he's expected. From a 30,000-foot view, from my seat in the bleachers, I feel like there's a gap between the Cardinals' statistics and how much they're winning, in that it feels like they're winning games maybe they shouldn't. Am I right? Am I wrong?
I don't think so. No, I think so. There's two parts to this, and the regular stats, those are actual results. So what happens is what ultimately matters, because that's going to determine whether you win or lose games and the number of games you end up winning or losing. But the current state isn't always predictive of what is going to come. Some of these other things tend to have nothing is perfect, but tend to be more helpful when forecasting in the future. But I wouldn't put it the way that in that specific way. I would say some guys have maybe had a little bit of good luck, but others have had bad luck. Like Ivan Herrera's had some bad luck. His numbers will turn even better when the luck starts to kind of flip back to his direction.
Yeah, I don't think I said that well. That's not what I'm getting at.
Okay.
What I'm getting at is we seem to be winning an awful lot of games for having half the team not playing well.
I mean, at least at times. But Ricky, you could attest to this. The reason why it's working is because while those guys that are struggling, other players are doing great.
Yeah, and I think you can go to every team in baseball, and this would be another way to say that, and you will find, you know, Cal Raleigh, Shohei Ohtani is struggling.
Right.
And yet the Dodgers are in first place, and Seattle's still – so you have those moments where you're struggling, and I think it's just a corrective thing when you talk about expected value going forward, just so you don't give up on people. I think that's
sure.
Part of it, where you could say, yeah, but you know, Matt Carpenter is a great example. At one point they went to Matt Carpenter and said, look, you're hitting the ball hard, you're hitting 170, but you're going to get better. And he did.
Yeah,
and I think
change,
that was an
right.
encouragement. That was an encouragement to him. Yeah, I will say that the predictive thing is kind of like predicting the weather. It's not always right.
That's a great call.
I mean, I really do think that there are times where the predictive thing includes, well, you used to do this. Well, yeah, I mean, I used to be 20, and I'm not. So so I think there's something not quite right. I don't think predictive models are great. I think they're good. I don't think they're great. Because Tony La Russa used to say what you said at the beginning, Kevin, is you either do or you don't.
Yep.
And you are. And the other thing you would always say is you are what your numbers say you are. And I think that's a pretty interesting way to look at it, too.
Yeah, especially at the end of a year, right? If you play 162, you are what your numbers say you are for that year. That's absolute.
That's right.
And when you take a guy, like another example of a guy we've talked about a lot, Rick, in this regard, has always been Lars Nootbaar, where Noot produces, like when he's healthy, he plays well. But there's always been these signs that he's actually better than that. Like there's more that could come. And whether it does or doesn't is a big question. But there are things that players do that can either enhance the chances of those things becoming better or maybe even hold them back.
So here's what, and this maybe to Dave's question too about why the Cardinals doing well, they've got a culture that's really cool right now. They've got young guys that think they're in every game. They're down by four going into the ninth inning, whatever it is, they think they're in it. And you know, whether that's Pollyanna or whether that's real, it doesn't matter. I mean, these guys are kind of in games and they're winning close games because there's a sense of no situation's too big for me. Now that thing that I just said is not measurable. That's not in these predictive models.
The
predictive models. And so I think the point is true that the Cardinals, you know, they've got some struggling people, but they're finding ways. And I think winning teams find ways because their culture is good. And so the predictive models don't always include things like heart and ability to adjust and all those things that players, you know, have that shows their real humanity.
Yeah. I mean, that's the old, to invoke Tony La Russa again, men, not machines. Psychology absolutely matters.
Yeah.
Well, we all know anyone who's played sandlot sports knows the feeling of momentum changing. And that probably would be measurable. I feel it as a fan You know, like if like the other night when we're winning and then they hit that dinger, like you feel your whole body just bleh, like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so some people, Dave, respond to that and say, okay, what's my counterpunch?
Right.
Some people say, oh, not our day. Yeah. Some people will say, I hope somebody else does something to get us back into this.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of human. I get it. There's a lot of human. Boy, look, we need Jack Clark right now. So there's a lot of human reaction to that that kind of defines the competitor in you and the way the teams works. And so, yeah, I think that again is not always measurable. And honestly, the Cal Raleigh's, and I go back to him. He was 0 for what, Kevin? 42, 39?
Yeah, it was 26 or 27 before he got his hit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to pitch to him. I'm just telling
right.
you. I mean, the guy's good. And the predictive models would say that he's going to be better.
Right.
Now, he might have to make an adjustment or two. And maybe that's the fact that people have adjusted to him and he needs to figure out what that thing is. But I certainly wouldn't count him out.
So, Rick, I know before the West Coast trip, we were worried about wearing out the bullpen, especially JoJo.
Yeah.
Did that kind of right size over the trip?
I think the off day was really good. You know, we asked Ollie about that, and Ollie said, you know, I don't think people needed the off day that much, and you know, because of the rain I'm talking about
right.
during that 17-game stretch. And then you do get an off day in San Diego. I think that was helpful. And so, you know, off days are like, you know, that's like finding gold. That's like the gold rush. I mean, you're out in Northern California and you find gold and you are set. I mean, you're so excited about it, but you can't tell anybody. But you feel like that's exactly what I needed. I think this kind of one off day can be so critically important for a bullpen. And I do think that's gotten righted. And I will say the other way to right it is to have your starters go 6-plus innings
yeah.
a lot. And the Cardinals have been better at that lately.
Yeah, McGreevy's been really good. If you turn to
yes.
May, the rotation's gotten quite a bit better. The only guy that really hasn't is Pallante, but that was one start, and the other one was fine. He's only
yeah.
had two starts so far this month. But McGreevy's doing what you're saying. Dustin May is getting 6 innings every time out right now. Ever since the second start, he's been basically 6 innings every time out. It's still a bit of a struggle in that regard for Kyle Leahy, but again, I don't think that's shocking given he hasn't started in a couple of years and he's still kind of building into the guy he
yeah.
can be. And then Libertor's close. He's not quite at 6 per inning, but he's 5 2/3 in the month
yeah.
of May. So it's trending the right direction.
So we think about the beginning of the year when Dustin May had a bad start. He was going 2 and 3 innings the first 2 starts. I mean, that's just 2 starts.
Right.
But he was struggling and he was getting hit hard. And boy, did he write. I mean, he's been a key thing to me, a key guy to me for the Cardinals, because he's become the guy that they thought he would be after the first 2 starts. You were like, uh-oh, we can't keep this going. So you think about how that affected the bullpen in those first 3 weeks of the season. You've got guys kind of pitching out of sequence, maybe too many innings, and it was not good. But I think, again, not just him, but other guys, you know, really all the starters are making it that much better on the bullpen. The bullpen still needs some work, I think, but getting better.
Can I tell you about my favorite players?
Yeah.
Burley is my favorite player. Feel free to tell
yeah.
him, Rick. And
I will.
My
I,
favorite pitcher is McGreevy, and here's why. Rick, I saw you last night alluding to this. I'm not saying Michael McGreevy is who's my boy from?
Greg Maddux.
Yes, but I love that he pitches that way. He doesn't
yeah,
rely
yeah.
on a 98 mile per hour fastball. I love that he is so strategic.
So Brad Thompson and I talked about this on the bus. We didn't talk about the fact that you love Burley, but we did. but I will tell him that. But what we talked about is that you know, if you're going to have a guy that pitches, that goes 6 innings, that does what McGreevy does, he's just a smart guy. He makes an adjustment quickly. He knows how to hold runners on better than any Cardinals that I can think of, all the starters I can think of, or all the relievers for that matter. But he's just a smart guy. He's just always kind of inventing things. I think there's again an art to pitching. If you have starters doing that, we're happy with that, because the starter, the Maddux type pitcher works. But when it comes to the bullpen, I want a guy that comes out and throws something that a guy can't swing, that's going to swing and miss at. So I feel like the game is evolving to being able to understand that we do like those guys, Dave, that you like. I mean, the John Tudors of the world. I think John Tudor would still be great in modern day baseball and mm-hmm. in current baseball. And maybe they would only let him go 6. Who knows? But the point is, that works as a starter to be that kind of pitcher. But as a reliever, I think you need those guys that are just 98, 99.
Ricky, with a guy like McGreevy, talk about the technical difference between control and command, because command is special, and that's for people that aren't as nerdy. It's actually a higher level of execution when you have command versus just control.
Yeah. Ollie likes to use the word mix, which I think is really good too. So. For somebody like McGreevy, it's not just throwing strikes. I think I could throw strikes right now. I really do. I mean, I could go out there from 60 feet. I'd throw strikes. I mean, I'd get whiplash from the ball whizzing by my head. But the point is, I could throw strikes. But can I throw it to the spot with the movement, with the velocity that I want, that will make a difference with the mix of the next pitch, which is a little harder on the other side of the plate and different movement? That's what pitching is. That's the kind of the in and out, the add and subtract is a phrase that John Smoltz likes to use, which I like. You're always adding and subtracting, in and out, up and down. And that's when you're commanding the strike. This strike zone is mine. I'm not hoping to get you out. I am attacking you within this strike zone with a lot of movement and precision. And that's really what McGreevy's doing. That, to me, that's command. I can throw that every time. I'm not going to make a mistake with it. I think when you look at some of the home runs that the Cardinals have given up, a lot of them are mistakes. Mm-hmm. Leahy would be an example. I mean, he's got great stuff, and then he hangs one. Yep. Well, you know what happens.
Rick, have a great homestand, buddy.
All right, guys.
Welcome back, DG SNK MOX, a few minutes shy of 2 p.m. Happy Friday. Gorgeous day. Dave Murray will be with us at 3:30. I think it's going to get a little warm this weekend, maybe the first time. I haven't turned on my air conditioner all year.
Wow.
Even those 2 days we had that was terrible, I just suffered through it. So this could be the first one. To my fellow Eastsiders here, I think we're losing the Piasau bird.
What do you mean?
Twice this week, I had people, there's my boy right there, my tattoo, and they're like, oh, dude, sick dragon tattoo. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Piasau bird. And they're like, I got nothing. What are you talking about? And I can never find people who know the Piasau bird. I think it's really an East Side thing, and I think you guys are like the last generation where it meant something.
Yeah, I just think it's not something anyone outside of like that immediate area ever really knew. You know what I mean? Even over in like St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a Metro East. Alton, Wood River.
It was the world and all to me. Like I was simultaneously terrified and fascinated, and what if they're still living in the caves?
I thought it was super cool, but like I think it's a niche interest.
It's like local color.
I mean, I was obsessed with it too, but we also drove past it twice a day every day.
Yeah. I didn't that much, but I was really excited when I could. Wheels, I have a couple weird baseball questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, like watching the game from Sacramento and, you know, Brad and Chip, they've got their camera people and all that. Is there one feed or is there two feeds? There's a feed for each team.
Yeah, each team. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you have two different whole teams of like camera people? That seems stupid.
I mean, they have, I'm not sure it's the actual cameras. They have their own trucks so that you can cut to what you want when you want, because one group might be wanting a highlight of the Cardinals while the other one wants the highlight of the A's. And you're maybe tracking different things. So
my other question is, bullpen catchers in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Who are these guys? Are they members of the team?
They're basically members of the coaching staff. It's a coaching staff position.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering, like, do they travel with the team and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a sweet gig.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times the guys that do that job are also part of the catching instruction group, something along those lines. So, they have jobs other than just catching pitches. Like they help, you know, track what's going on. They were, you know, do whatever little things like oversee drills for, you know, whatever for the catching position as an example.
Gotcha.
But it probably varies a little bit by team and by guy.
Did you guys see the Murdaugh murder overturning the conviction?
Mm-hmm.
Which was 100%, if anyone cares what I think, the right thing to do. The guy's guilty as can be. He'll be tried again. He'll probably be convicted again. But there was this busybody court clerk, and I've met a million of them, who was, they think they're the king or queen of this little fiefdom, and they're like the den mother for the jury, and they're always taking them here and taking them there. And she was saying things like, watch him closely, don't be fooled, this shouldn't take you guys very long, you just can't do that.
No.
And then she lied about it under oath and later pled guilty to perjury. So this is a great example for anyone who cares about the law or justice or finds the concepts interesting, is that we all know this guy did it. We all know it. But you just, it's more important to not let that go. The law would rather see him go free, if he does someday, than have a tainted conviction.
Right. Mm. Because if that behavior is allowed, it can lead to more innocent people being put in prison.
Yes.
And you'd rather have to go through the process again and retry this guy than get this guy because he's guilty, and then that precedent stands and someone else does it, and they corral
I'm
an innocent guy.
I'm mad at her in the same way I'm mad at the guy who went to the dump in Africa and started the hantavirus thing.
Mm.
It's like one person can really cause a lot of problems.
Argentina, I think.
Argentina, thank you.
Yeah, not great.
Not a great decision.
No.
Why didn't they go to the dump?
Because he was a bird watcher, and there was a rumor that there was a rare bird that only appears at this dump.
At the dump.
Which is called the end of the world. And so he thought he would go try to get a look. A little look-see.
Welp.